Welcome, all of you. I'm Anthony Harris. I live in a suburb of Minneapolis called Edina, and I'm a member of Calvary Lutheran Church, which, for some of you that know Minneapolis, is on the corner of 39th and Chicago, which is right in the heart of the city. I'm one of those suburban people in Minneapolis that goes into the to support inner city churches. I should tell you that our church, I'm currently the president of the congregation. We had new pastors come 2 years ago when I joined. There were less than 40 people worshiping, and today we're worshiping over 150 on average. And our stewardship numbers have gone up 39% for the last 3 years, our pledges and commitments and those kinds of things. So there is there's faith and there's hope, I guess, which is really the topic for tonight. I titled Circles of Hope for a couple of reasons. In my business, I happen to be a business consultant and spent 20 years in business, and also was theologically trained, and at the age of 40 decided I wanted to add to some of the things I was doing, so I had a more rich vocation. And so I created a consulting entity called Unbounded Grace. And I ended up working in partnership with Lutheran Brotherhood on a major project, which is around what might it take and what should we be doing about strengthening faith communities, i.e. congregations, institutions of the church, so that they can their ministry is enhanced and people understand their ministry. And so we spent a couple of years doing some research, and I'm just finishing the design of a strategic planning process called Journey of Hope. We're working with a number of congregations across the country, in Minnesota, in Oregon, in Washington, in Arizona, and soon Nevada and California. A component of this, we believe, and I'm going to sort of talk at you, which I haven't done before, but I think it's important for you to kind of get some of the sense of our ideas, is that we believe that in order for faith communities to be vital, people need to be engaged in their own faith development. And what I mean by faith development is your ongoing both care and learning in terms of your faith, not only sort of privately, but also corporately or collectively in a small group or in your worship service. What we found is that when many people sort of, the last time they've had any serious discussion about their faith was in confirmation. And for some, that was a very long time ago. So as we build mission or help congregations with their mission, we've discovered that there is a lot of work that needs to be done around this whole area of what we would call faith maturity and faith development. Specifically, there are a couple of ways of looking at faith. There are probably two dimensions of faith. One has to do with sort of your personal relationship with God, sort of yourself and God, and we might look at that sort of vertically. To what extent do you have a rich experience of God in your life? The other dimension, which is horizontal, has to do with in what ways are you comfortable in expressing your faith with, to, among others? How does your faith, how is your faith active in the world? Not only within your boundaries of your personal family, but also within your community. We're fortunate in that the Search Institute has developed a process or a questionnaire that people can complete that asks you a series of questions about your practices in your life, as well as what was your home life like, in terms of how often did your parents talk to you about God, your father before age 10 and after age 10, or your mother before age 10 and after age 10. In addition to that, there are about 28 dimensions of what we might call faith-enhancing practices for congregations. I'll mention a couple of those. One is helping parents effectively teach their children the faith. I will tell you that in our research, that particular dimension is rated the lowest of all 28 among more than 2,000 churches that we've surveyed so far.
You mean, what do you mean rated the lowest?
What we do is we ask people to say, to what extent do you experience this in your congregation? To what extent do you, and we'll ask young people, to what extent does an adult, other than your parents, engage you around your faith? We don't use those words, but that's basically the gist of it. And how many, what percent of the people felt that that happened for them? And usually in these cases, particularly parents feeling like they're being nurtured to teach their children the faith, less than 5% of the people in the congregation will say that they're experiencing that dimension. Now that's different from, do you feel that your kids are getting good Sunday school programming? You see the subtle difference? Not so subtle, actually. What I've been very surprised by so far in the research is less than 20%, actually less than 15% of most people had the experience of their mother and father talking to them about God when they grew up. What's absolutely shocked me. In other words, did your mother talk to you about God before the age of 12? How many of you felt that happen? And less than 15% of the people in most of the congregations we've talked to had that experience. That wasn't my experience. I've been checking this out. I have a theory, because most of the research has been in Minnesota so far and in the Midwest. And I'm hoping that we get some new data as we do the research in Washington and California and also in the South or the lower part of the Midwest. But those are the kinds of things that we're discovering.
What's your sampling on in terms of, are you sampling people that are in their 60s or in their...
No, this is across... what we basically do is about 90% of the average worship number. So we don't count total baptized members because that's a real squishy number. You all know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's who's showing up. So what we'll do...
Lutheran Church?
Oh, yeah.
So what you are sampling older people in the Lutheran Church?
Actually, no, because what will happen... Let me give you an example. If there are 300 and some people that are coming to worship, we will also do all of the fifth graders, all of the youth, and so we have to have a sample number at least 20, and usually we're averaging, in most cases, 100 or 200, and so we are getting the youth input because we're being very deliberate about it. We're not doing traditional sampling because that gets you into trouble.
Yeah.
We're basically saying, what's the number? We got to do 90% of your average worship number, because anybody can raise their hand and say, well, I wasn't involved in this, etc. But yeah, but the truth of the matter is, things like worship and preaching are rated high. Community outreach tends to be in the lower 50th percentile. People don't feel that that's happening. But to our surprise, really, the issue around, am I being equipped as a parent to teach my child the faith? And people are saying, and do I feel supported by this faith community? If I were to have a problem, would this be the place that I would come? Yes?
Just because I'm really interested, I want to ask again the question about, did my mom talk to me about God?
Yes,
Did
we pray at dinner?
Okay, yeah. Well, just a minute. Let me say then I'm going to have to maybe say no much to my surprise, but that mom and dad always went to church and always took me to Sunday school is a different question.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Because I'm more religious from my personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more being here this week, I've all of a sudden got the idea, well, my folks weren't religious like I am today, mm-hmm. but I would have told you they were religious. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yeah, there's a difference of being taken to church, being taken to Sunday school, and having your parents talk to you about God and Jesus and faith.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have not done this in a culturally diverse congregation yet, and I have a hunch that that question may be answered differently. particularly if people grew up in the 60s, or 50s and 60s. So we'll have to hear more about that. What this all leads to are a couple things that and I'll make 3 points and then we'll move into something interesting too. One is that the church often finds itself sort of grounded in a fantasy about what they think the faith ought to be. Or at best, grounded in some kind of misinformation about their reality. In every congregation we're working with, I always ask the church council their perceptions of what they think is reality about who they are. Before we do any surveys, before we look at the neighborhood, any of that. And usually they're hitting about 40% accuracy in terms of what is real. And the first part of being an effective faith community is knowing who's there. And by the way, most churches can't tell me who's really there.
You know, Sunday mornings?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's there? How old are they? How long have they been here? I've had churches tell me they had 6,000 members, and when we really got down to it, they had 3,500. Mm-hmm. Or they would say that, you know, we're really an older population. But then I discover, as we dig a little deeper, that they've got this like 30 or 40, you know, an inn of 30 or 40 people who are like in their 20s who have some very interesting things to say, whose voice is not being heard. And oftentimes we are in a majority-minority framework rather than hearing all of the voices that are there. And this particular survey is called Voices of Faith. And the goal is to hear everyone's voice and to deal with that reality. So that's the first thing I'd say. The second thing is, faith communities must strengthen themselves by helping people deepen their faith. And you deepen your faith in a number of ways, but what I will tell you is that adult forums usually don't do it. They're really wonderful, safe lecturettes, or it's nice to have visitors, and it's great to have these people come and show you slides of the last time they went to Turkey, or they're going to come and talk about, you know, some kind of experience that they've had. But that is not helping people deepen their faith. In some cases, the small group movement is helping, but a lot of what the small groups are doing is really for people who are seekers, and so some of that stuff is fairly thin. And even people who have been seekers who have found the faith, and this is at churches where I've, in Arizona, where a number of people have, you know, they didn't even know what the Bible was 5 years ago, but they've come along and they've said, you know, I want something meatier, deeper. In all of the cases, people are asking to be challenged and to be helped along in terms of their faith. The other piece is, and this is my opinion, that the church must re-embrace its sense of the incarnational aspect of our faith and what I call the invitational aspect or value or characteristic of our faith. Particularly when it comes to stewardship, people don't feel like they're being invited to share their dreams or to share about where they are in their faith. And so the church has to be invitational not only to those that are outside, but for those that are already sitting there. So I'll leave you with those thoughts in terms of why we need to help people focus on what does it mean to be servants of hope and to provide hope in people's lives. Yesterday, when I spoke to folks, I articulated some key questions that I think people are living with. And as I talk to church councils and folks, I find folks in their 40s and 50s are asking these questions as well. Am I the only one who is confused? And is there a safe place for me to express my confusion? And the question is, as you think about your congregations, are your congregations safe places for people to express their confusion? What can I trust Am I on my own? Can I feel good about myself? And how can I face the future? This one is particularly apropos for not only people getting out of college, but also folks in their mid-40s, or if you've been in a town where there's been a lot of downsizing, or industry is changing, people are really worried and concerned about the future. And so the focus of becoming servants of hope is the focus on deepening and enriching people's faith in a safe place. And I emphasize safety because when you're confused, the last thing you need to know to be is to be kind of jumped on because you either see it differently or you have a different question or you don't know where the particular piece of the Bible is. I love this. Don't ever assume that everyone knows all the books of the Bible. Some churches have even gone to just instead of telling you, you know, go to James XXX, they just say turn to page 2342 because you just save a lot of energy by that. So we have to be very careful about what we assume in the way in which we're trying to create a safe or what I might say a hospitable or an invitational so that we can experience the incarnation among ourselves. So, out of all of that, a couple things. We think the work is really about cultivating the Christian life. You don't reach a point. Confirmation is not a destination. It is a journey. That you are constantly in the process of being confirmed because of the circumstances and the realities of your life as you move forward. And we make a big mistake by saying, child, I got to do confirmation, thank you, Jesus, here's your present, bye. We have this real terminal viewpoint around confirmation in our church, and it's destroying us because it's a wonderful milestone, it's a wonderful ritual for that time in your life. But think about it. When was the last time you reconsidered the Lord's Prayer? I'm orthodox enough to believe that maybe every other year we ought to be reconfirmed. Because the circumstances in our life enrich our lives, and as we have a dialogue with the scriptures, out of who we are and where we are, we're enriched by that. But we have to have a safe place where we can have that dialogue and discussion. And it doesn't happen in a 10-minute homily by somebody talking about themselves. It's helpful, it's nice, but we can't help you deepen your faith if you're not in dialogue. So, I'm going to put you to work. I have a wonderful poem I want to read to you. This one is by Robert Frost. It's entitled Investment. Over back where the speak of life as staying, you couldn't call it living, for it ain't. There was an old, old house renewed with paint, and in it a piano loudly playing. Out in the plowed ground in the cold, a digger among unearthed potatoes standing still was counting winter dinners on a hill with half an ear to the piano's vigor. All that piano and new paint back there, was it some money suddenly come into, or some extravagant young love had been to, or old love on an impulse not to care? Not to sink under being man and wife, but get some color and music out of life. Now my question for you is this. Where is there color and music in your life right now?
I work with a small group coordinator in our church, and for the last 4 or 5 years, and for me, color is that. It's challenging, and laughter to me is music. Mm-hmm. Challenging, but exciting, and comforting, that trust mm-hmm. you're talking about mm-hmm. is there. It's, and then the other piece of it is I coordinate program and training for young children in our county. a nonprofit organization, and working with the adults to teach them how to work with kids to nurture and let them grow and give them skills, to me, is great. Colorful and musical.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. How about group number one?
Well, I think we, in our group, we really run the spectrum from somebody stepping forward into his life. It all stretches out ahead of him.
Yeah.
And myself is kind of in the middle years.
Sure.
And enjoying all my family's activities and mm-hmm. volunteer work and interaction.
Sure.
To our other folks who are really enjoying the retirement years and the lovely experiences they offer. Mm-hmm.
This is a picture of a wonderful congregation, isn't it? This is the whole intergenerational thing.
Yeah, we need those Gen Xers.
Yes, they do liven things up a bit.
We just need them.
Oh, great. The interesting thing about it is if you were to ask this question at different points in your life, or to go back and say, for those of you that are older, or even for if you would say back to go back to fifth grade and say, what was colorful and exciting about your life at that point? It's a really good question to think about. It. So sort of where does God show up behind all of that? This group.
There's one we haven't heard from.
Two of us.
Oh, you guys didn't get to two of you? Oh.
We had that large group.
Yeah.
You want to share?
Oh, no. I'd like to hear from those two.
Would you guys mind briefly telling us? Or?
I guess color and music, and one of our group, what's her name?
Margie.
She was saying that she felt color and music were the same.
Mm.
That, you know, color is music and music is color. Both are joyful.
Mm-hmm.
And so she felt they were the same.
Mm.
Another comment was that music was friends.
Yeah, yeah. Something I heard overheard that.
Was what?
Yeah. Music, friends, or music?
Friendship.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that was good.
Huh.
And color for one of us was
for you.
For was grandchildren and bonding with grandchildren. That was that was color for, and that goes along with what you said. Mm-hmm. The different stages in life.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Great. Good. This group?
You just got
I think the interesting one was this woman worked at Mother Teresa for 20 years and is now in a really transitional part of her life. She and I have the same kind of ideas about color and music, and that is, for me, fear and challenge are definitely in that for my part this time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Fear and challenge?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. More Stravinsky.
What?
More like Stravinsky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know just Stravinsky, but he could evoke fear and challenge.
Very quick and agitated.
Yes.
Music.
Yes. In some Picasso pieces, probably. We need other stories that were told that stood out. Why would you ask a group this question? Why is it a good question?
It makes us instantly have to think of thankfulness instead of all the other crap in our heads. Excuse me.
There you go.
Get you thinking of something positive, too.
There you go.
And those are beautiful words.
There you go. I'm using materials that have not been published yet. We've been working on this, and
I just just popped out of that.
It was interesting to me in reflecting on the question that, though I know you knew you meant the words metaphorically, that actually the color and music in my life is color and music.
Yeah. Uh huh. Uh huh.
That surprised me as I was thinking about it. You know.
Yeah. And it can be that concrete. Yes, one man.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a look at Isaiah, and I would like somebody to volunteer to read. Would you read for us? We're going to look at Isaiah 42, verses 1 through 9. And when you get to verse 9, I want you to reread verse 9 three times.
Did you say the thing again?
Yeah, sure. Isaiah 42, verses 1 through 9.
680.
Yeah. Hey,
600.
Good for you. See?
Or 22,
600. See, I'm scared to say those numbers because they have all kind of Bibles here holding, so you don't know if you're going to be consistent.
What were the verses?
Yes, I'll give you the verses again. Verses 1 through 9, and could you just read it out loud?
She's
going to read, yeah.
Here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry or lift up his voice, or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be crushed, until he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands wait for his teaching. Thus says God, the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it, who gives breath to the people upon it, and spirit to those who walk in it. I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. I have taken you by the hand and kept you. I have given you as a covenant to the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison those who sit in darkness. I am the Lord. That is my name. My glory I give to no other, nor my praise to idols. See, the former things have come to pass, and new things I now declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them.
Thank you. Now, this clearly is a messianic message, but it also has significant application for those of us who choose to follow the Messiah. So these words are spoken to you as well. Silently reread them, thinking about the message to you as a person of faith. Okay, there are six powerful words in this text that stand out for some of us that have read it and thought about this. And what we want to, I'm going to give you those six words, and there are probably other powerful words as well, but I want you to choose one of those six. Choose the one that you think most reflects where you are in your life right now, at this very moment, here and now in this place. And those words are the following: servant, chosen one, bruised reed, smoldering wick, covenant, and light. I'll say those again. Servant, chosen one, bruised reed, smoldering wick, covenant, and light. The question is, which of these words from the text most captures who I am right now in my life and in my faith walk?
Because they're real for me, but I thought 2 seconds ago you said how come, like generically, and I'm a fan of Peck, my friend's first name, Roll, and The Road Less Traveled, and first sentence is...
Scott Peck.
Yeah, yes, thank you, Scott. Let's roll, man. And his first sentence is, life is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Nicer word, but it won't come to me.
Sure.
And I was kind of raised that way, and I'm more thankful than I can share that it's important to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've had these six experiences, and that's okay.
They do reflect the dimensions, yes.
Can I share mine?
Yes, please.
Bruised reed.
Mm.
I identified with that because I work with communities of men and women that have had hurt in their lives. A lot with refugees. I worked with women from Bosnia, I worked with Palestinian women in the slums of India,
mm-hmm.
Africa, Chile. And some, when I'm with them, experiencing their life, hearing their story, retelling it and doing advocacy within the organizations,
mm-hmm.
their bruises become my brood. Mm-hmm. And I really feel at that time a Bruce Reed, and I live with these stories because mm-hmm. they never leave you. Mm-hmm. So that was one reason I took that as one.
Wow. Thank you. The servants in the room, can someone give me a case around servants? How you pick servant?
Well, I think being the chosen one, I was one that chose several.
Okay.
Being the chosen one puts us into servanthood.
That, oh, wow, okay.
Because I feel we are so blessed having this life with Christ mm-hmm. that then certainly we want to be servants to others mm-hmm. because that's certainly what he did all of his life.
And support those Bruce Reeds that are out
yes.
there in our next door, across the world, in other parts of the country. Very important. These are the kinds of questions that we think are important questions that people of faith need to be asked and given an opportunity to dialogue about. Because I don't know, I might know you as a nice person who sits next to me. If you and I are sitting in the same church, but I just learned so much about you and what you, in just the moment that you shared that about the Bruce Reed, I learned a lot about you. I learned a lot about your life when you talk about how you were raised. It deepens my connection to you. It also frees me up to be able to share some of what my life has been about and what's important to me. We have one last question if you guys are willing to hang in there. Are you?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you doing okay?
You're doing fabulous. I wish I had you on video.
Yes. Well,
you doubt.
We will be doing some of this at the, there's a Region 1 meeting in October on singing a new song, which lay people and clergy from Washington, Alaska, Montana, Oregon, we will be using some of these processes as we look at case studies around innovating churches, and we're looking forward to that. You know, in verse 9, it talks about what new things do I hear the Lord declaring already now before they spring into being. Remember that wording in there? Before they spring into being. What's sort of what I call, what's moving across the waters? What's coming in your life? What do you sense? What changes in your life and in the life of perhaps the church or the faith community that you're connected with are already kind of brewing, coming? And I'd like you to ponder on that for a moment. And I'm going to leave that open for the whole group. And so ponder on that for a moment, and then let's talk out loud about that as a large group.
Yeah, you just restricted this to the faith communities we're connected with?
Yes, yeah, your personal faith community. So it could be you in your life and or your faith community. That's the question. Okay. Who's willing to share? Yes.
Well, I graduated from college.
Congratulations.
So I'm legally unemployed now. And I can start looking for a new kind of job. So that's a new horizon for me. And in our church, we're getting a new pastor starting September 1st. And we've been without one for just about exactly a year. I think it's an exciting, it's been terrific watching our church work in the absence of a pastor. Mm-hmm. And it's been a beautiful experience, and I'm hoping it will continue when that dream comes.
Great. Ask him to, or her, to let you continue to work effectively so that they can be about
other
ministry.
I'm sure he'd be willing. It's just whether they, you know, it seems like they kind of drop off when they
sure.
pastor there.
Sure.
I'll share. This isn't something that's just happened recently, but in the past, let's say, 3 or 4 years in our congregation, we've started a program called the Adult Catechumenate, where members that that have not been brought up in the Christian faith or perhaps had some introduction as children and fell away from it, mm-hmm. are paired with members of our congregation that act as sponsors. Mm-hmm. And they meet at least on a weekly basis on Sundays and often occasionally during the week as well for some teaching about the faith and sharing of you know, what the journey is about, and there's daily devotions that both of them follow together and discuss, and then you're also to meet with your, if you're a sponsor, you meet with a candidate outside of any formal instruction, just work out how to spend, you know, whether you want to go for walks together or whatever, so that you share your stories with each other about your life. And those that are ready at the end of this process may choose to go through baptism or affirmation of baptism, if that's the point that they reach, but everyone doesn't come to the same point necessarily. Kind of an exciting journey thing.
Mm-hmm. And that you have so many people who've been members engaged in it. It's neat. Yes?
In my personal life, I just have two new grandchildren the last couple of years, and I'm looking forward to that in retirement in a few years. Mm-hmm. In our faith community, we had a group that started as wanting to become grief ministers about 3 years ago. Mm. And we took a series of training, and then that group has continued to meet on a monthly basis for 3 years now, growing and studying. And I was thinking, like you said, you don't learn from lectures, you learn from discussion. And I have seen so much growth in that group. And now we've gone from two pastors down to one, and it'll be a while till we get another one. Mm-hmm. And I see that group being called on more and more to minister to other members of the congregation.
So isn't that ironic? You came to deal with grief, and you're probably going to serve in a life-giving role in terms of supporting the church while the pastor's gone.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Wow. And after the training, you just hung in there for 3 more years.
We'll continue to grow and to learn. And we've done some grief ministry within the congregation, wow. But I think there's going to be more of it.
Great.
And several of the members have now taken training as Eucharistic ministers, too. Are going to be doing that. But I think being comfortable in the other one helped me be confident to go ahead in that.
Great. That's the bell, but do we have one more?
I think my church in Olympia has taken on a vision, finally. I mean, they struggled with it for a couple of years. And finally has a focus on a youth and family ministry, which is kind of exciting. And we're, you know, possibly going to build and expand staff and try and really meet the needs of family and youth in our community. And that's exciting.
I hope it's uplifting for some of you. I certainly get uplifted when I hear these things. It's not that we negate the things that are tough in life, it's just that we want to look at those things that are also very positive as well. I think building and enriching and deepening faith has to do with a discussion and dialogue about both those aspects of our life experience and the faith. And so I wish you well as you journey forward. And thank you for coming.